welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I am joined by an extremely accomplished doctor and researcher and author who's here to talk about a book that I think is so not only informative, but a lot of fun, which I think is an essential part of its philosophy. So hello, welcome to the show. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Sure. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm Dr. Hassan Mirali. I'm a pediatric ER physician. I work at McMaster University at a children's hospital. And my book is called Sleep Well, Take Risks, Squish the Peas, Secrets from the Science of Toddlers for a Happier, More Successful Way of Life.
It is such, as I said, such a fun book and also so informative. And that is the first question, actually, that I would like to ask, because in your role as a doctor and as a researcher, you've written for lots and lots and lots of different audiences, from, you know, super professional academic type writing to think pieces for the internet to now like a popular science book. So could you talk a little bit about, the different voices that you have to use in your writing and maybe any new challenges or opportunities that writing this book presented?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So for most of my career, which has been about 14 years, I started my pediatrics residency 14 years ago. I have been a researcher, and most of my research is focused on global child health. And I do a lot of work around newborn health and injury prevention, mostly in low-income countries. And so my work up until a couple of years ago had really been academic journal writing. And I'd written a lot of those types of articles. But I made the switch a couple of years ago because I thought if I focused my writing on a different type of audience, I might be able to make a bigger impact and reach a broader audience. And the type of ideas and work that I'm doing now, I think, would really benefit a much broader audience. And so what I want to do now, and what this book is really about, is bring the lessons from children to adults, especially focusing on that very young age of toddlers and preschoolers from age 1 to 5. And so I've had to modify my writing quite a bit. So from that type of academic writing where I'm going through different studies and writing very formally, to writing, and I'm glad you mentioned it, in a more fun way, which is, I think, more fun for me as well, because I get to include a lot of stories from the patients I've interacted with, or even just kids that I see at preschool. I have a preschooler now. And during this time, I had my first daughter, and she kind of went through the toddler stages too. So she pops up in the book too a little bit. So that type of transition from writing very formally to more informally, but still having the science behind it, has been challenging, but a lot of fun for me.
Cool. Yeah, it's a really interesting challenge to make very specialized research, I think, accessible to a wider audience. And I think this book does engage in a lot of play, which I think is something that it advocates, right? So could you talk a little bit about your argument? What is special about this age range, right? Because I think you're covering like 1 to 5, you say. And what did your observations tell you about, I guess, let me rephrase that. At what point did you realize your observations were a book that could help people?
Yeah, so these observations have kind of been popping up little by little over the last 10, 15 years as I've interacted with different children. And eventually, I came to the conclusion that there's just so much there that I wanted to just dive into it a little more. So I did my own research and looking into these traits that I was seeing, like play, like taking risks, like eating in a more healthy way. And I found that there was a lot there. And at the same time, when I talk to people about toddlers, not everyone, but sometimes they get a bad reputation. And there's this term that I don't like at all called terrible twos. I don't think it applies at all. And one of my goals in writing this is to really, I hope to to change people's minds about this idea. It's really terrific twos, I think, is a better term, or something similar to that. Because we hear toddlers and see them, understandably, when they're being very loud. And I'm not saying tantrums are real, they are very real, but it's a very tiny portion of their day. If you look at the data, an average temper tantrum is 3 minutes as a medium. And at the very high end, it's maybe 10 minutes. And that's out of their 12 hours that they're awake. And so what are they doing for the other, 11 and a half to 12 hours? They're playing, they're laughing, they're looking for projects to do, they're trying to read books. And this is a whole chapter because they just love reading. And they're really building relationships. And so that's what I really wanted to get at, or is what are toddlers doing the rest of their time? And if you look at that, it's actually amazing how they spend their time.
It really is, and I think something that what you've just said really brings out is that, when we talk about the terrible twos, like we are not having a lot of empathy for these children. And that's something that comes so naturally to them through what you've observed. They are so caring for each other naturally, without, ulterior motives, like just very genuinely. And I think that it's a very, very loving character portrait of toddlers too, in addition to the sort of like advice that's laid out for what we can learn from them. I'm really interested in how this ties into your global research and experiences of observing children all over the world. I'm very interested in, childhood must be very sort of culturally shaped by environment and culture and economics and all these things, but there are also sort of universal sort of toddler traits or tendencies that you talk about. So yeah, is this something that you have seen all over the world in your observations?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So I really focus on what are the universal ones. And I do think all of these traits are universal. I'm reminded, I work a lot in Cambodia, and I work in these floating villages where people are living on these houses that are just in on a lake, and they don't have any access to land. And so they have to keep these docks and little houses that they have very clean. And when you see the toddler there, what they're doing is just picking up that broom and sweeping most of the day because they want to be helpful, and they want to try to be a part of the family in that way. And it reminds me of my daughter. After our dinner time, she makes a pretty big mess on the floor, and afterwards she's ready to clean. She will go and get the broom by herself. We don't have to ask her. She'll come over. Mostly, she smears all the food into the floor that she's made, but she's putting in a lot of effort, and she's getting better every day. And I think that's one of the things that they want to do, is they want to improve all the time. So yes, getting back to your point, there are things that I've seen all over. All toddlers like to laugh. All toddlers like to play. All toddlers take risks. And certainly in my line of work as a pediatric ER doctor, I see this a lot because I take care of a lot of little kids with fractures, no matter where I'm working.
I really love that. Like they're very essentially human traits too, I think, that maybe we kind of unlearn in adulthood to kind of get into, to survive in the modern world we've built. I'm really interested in the risk-taking aspect because just observing myself, I think that that is something that grown-ups are terrible at, and a personal anecdote was that I tried to learn how to ski when I was 30 and I couldn't. And all my friends who had learned when they were children, around like 7, 8, 9, 10, were fearless about it because they learned at an age when they weren't afraid of breaking bones or falling down or doing something wrong the first time. And at 30, I had just acquired too many inhibitions to really do that, And so, of course, that does put you in harm's way sometimes, because you do end up in the ER. But it's also like it's a really like kind of enthusiastic embrace of the learning process, So yeah, could you talk about maybe let's link this to the book's intro, because I love your opening scene of the book with you imagining a day in the life of an adult if we lived like toddlers, right? So could you talk about maybe how risk-taking functions in all this and how it can improve our lives as grown-ups?
Yeah, it's such a good one because they take so many more risks than adults, and we really become risk averse as we get older. And we're looking for more sure bets. And that makes sense because we know what we want. But toddlers think very differently. They want to take risks because they want to learn new things. And they're very high risk, high reward. I have a subtitle in the book called Casino Ban, because you would never want to have this attitude when you're in a casino. But because they're able to take those types of big risks, they're able to learn what the world presents. But more importantly, they're able to learn, the limitations of their bodies and what they can do. And that's really what they focus on, because they understand that without taking those risks, they're going to kind of flatline in their learning. And that's true for adults as well. If we don't take those risks, then we're also not going to grow as quickly as someone who does take a lot of risks. And what's nice about about toddlers is that this is coupled with a very, very high level of confidence. Like they will wake up, they think they're great. In fact, they're overconfident about almost everything. I have a little anecdote. My daughter, she's pretty happy to see me in the morning. Then I kind of put her down and she walks over to the mirror and she gives herself a high five because she thinks she can do anything. And this risk-taking coupled with this high level of confidence, even in the face of feedback that they're not doing so well. There's so many studies where there's a memory game. And so adults have been tested on this and toddlers about how many cards they're going to get right in a matching game. And adults will get close to where they actually are, but toddlers consistently will guess like 30, 40% higher than where they actually are. Even if they're getting feedback about they're not getting the scores that they thought they would, they will still think that they're going to get much higher than they would. And they also think that about everyone else. They think their friends are fantastic and they're overconfident about them. And so these two things together, this risk-taking and high level of confidence, allows them to learn like nobody else and allows them to grow like nobody else. Those few years that they have in this early childhood time is more learning than we experience in any other period.
Gosh, yeah, it's almost I'm almost envious of the confidence because
Yes, me
I
too.
remember watching my niece draw. She's 5, and she's just
Oh,
drawing
nice.
taco, and she's like, "Wow, I am the best at drawing tacos." And I'm like, "You are, you really are." And like, it's because you believe that, you know? It's do you think that like toddlers are naturally more mindful than us? Because so much of these observations sort of like line up with what I've learned from like, practicing mindfulness. Like they're kind of in the moment rather than in their heads a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They don't think a lot about the future. They're really very, very much in the moment. And one of the things I thought about recently was how they're actually the best mindful eaters. So you will never, not never, but rarely do I see kids in the ER because people think they're overeating. Like toddlers will stop and fight, and the number one complaint that parents will bring their kids in around eating is that they're not eating enough or they're not getting enough. And that's rarely the case. It's really the toddler is being mindful about what they're taking in. They can sense when their body is full, and then they just do the next natural step, which is stop eating. Whereas adults eat for a lot of different reasons. Hunger is just one of them, but there's boredom, stress, being tired, all of these other reasons. And so if you look at I've looked at just the mindful eating practices that people have, and I think it matches perfectly well with what a toddler does.
It really does. Wow. Yeah. And, they treat meal time as though it is playtime too. I think adults, like,
Yes.
we'll look at our phones while we eat, or we'll do another, chore, or we'll work through our lunch or something. And like toddler meals take forever because they stop to play or to squish the peas, because it's like
Exactly.
interesting sensorially. Like there's just like it's like they're very zen, or like the dude from the Big Lebowski, they're just like in the moment and enjoying it. And that's such a admirable attitude.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, thank you for that. Not to squish the peas. It's exactly. They're infusing play into everything they do, including eating.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if when you did have your own child, I'm sure that you saw the same behaviors that you witnessed outside in your own household, but I'm wondering if there was any new perspective that the personal and family connection lent you. Did you learn anything new from your own personal experience as opposed to sort of like your practices outside the house, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I guess one thing I don't get as much, I get a little bit of this, is the laughter. That if you spend time with a toddler full time, I mean, I have never laughed in my life as much as I have in the last few years. She's three now. And so I think that really came to light. And I decided to write a whole chapter on that because what I could really see, being around her all the time is not only her like laughing at anything that was silly, but her trying to make other people around her, especially me, laugh more. And so that was, I think, one of the most special ones that that came for me. And it's just so wonderful. I'm always laughing with her because that's what they want to do. And there's actually a great TED talk, and the authors of a laughter book talk about the humor cliff that we all go off because we laugh so much less than little kids do. And if we were able to bring that back, there's so many benefits: decreased stress, decreased anxiety, better mood, all kinds of things. And the other one I think will be good for your audience, which if anyone spent any time around a toddler will know, is reading. And this is not something I get a lot of in my brief patient interactions, but living with her and raising her, it's just been incredible. Like every single day, she will bring me a book and will want to sit and read for as long as possible. And everyone around her, she will just try to get them to read with her. And they like to kind of build their own little libraries. So she has her own little library in her room where she's like organizing her books and, picking her favorites and wanting to go to the public library to get new books all the time. And so this drive to always be reading and reading every day, which has incredible benefits, especially being protective against things like cognitive decline and dementia, is one of the things I've learned from her as well. And I've definitely boosted up my reading thanks to her.
Oh, nice. I was super interested in how reading also played into the idea of bedtime rituals and how grown-ups can benefit from that, because as a lifelong insomnia sufferer, I was very, very interested in that section. So could you talk a little bit, about like maybe the sleep routines and how that is also something I think that's missing from grown-up lives in general, is that we don't really like we don't engage in routines because we're kind of just going from one task to the next.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And I think the best place to describe routines, as you say, is around bedtime. Toddlers just thrive on routines. And one of the reasons they have temper tantrums sometimes is because they're off their routine. And so they really, really need this. And where I think they shine and where they can get the best sleep, and we can learn a lot from it, is around the bedtime routine. So the toddler bedtime routine is actually pretty straightforward. It starts an hour before you want to go to bed. And this really has to be a set time because your body will get used to that time. And so I think the first point is to really make sure that that time is something that works for your life and that you're going to stick to, and not keep pushing it. And so once you have that time, it starts an hour before that. And so 1 hour before that, what works for toddlers most of the time, and adults as well, is taking a hot bath or shower. And then after that, there's just no screens at all. And so the cell phone or iPad has to be in a completely different room, can be getting charged, whatever. It just can't be around you. There's a hygiene item. So for toddlers, it's brushing their teeth. It can be the same thing for adults. And then there has to be a quiet activity. And this can be really anything. A lot of moms and dads will sing with their toddler. I think most of us, being toddler parents, will read, because that's what toddlers are wanting from their parents. And I think it's the perfect way to end the night. It's something that is not overly stimulating in terms of screens. It's something that if you read before you sleep, you'll be able to consolidate a lot of that information. And it's something very calming and relaxing for most people that helps. So hot bath or shower, one hygiene item, and then reading is the best, simplest bedtime routine.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it is like I actually literally tried it last night and I was like, this is very soothing. Like, and I did fall asleep much faster. And again, it seems like it's kind of oriented around like getting out of your head, out of like the hustle and bustle and back into your body, like kind of grounded in the present as opposed to sort of like on your tomorrow or on what happened during the day. Could you talk a little bit about this is from an article that I found of yours, but I thought it paired up with what you talk about in the book in such interesting ways about the gentleness of children. You talked a little bit about body cam experiments with children and observing children interacting with each other. Could you talk about what you discovered there and how that links up with what you write about in the book?
I'm glad you found that one. It's an older one, but it was really when I was developing some of these ideas. And this really gets back to, okay, like we give toddlers this reputation of they're having a tantrum, but what are they actually doing? And it was around the time when I was seeing a lot of body cam footage from adults that was very violent and disturbing. And so I wanted to look at what is the flip side of that if we put body cams on children, and how are they spending most of their time? And it really comes down to helping people. And what they want to do is go around, learning, of course, but a lot of what we see when we put body cams on children is helping behaviors. So they're working in teams. They're making sure that, everyone has a turn. They're participating in a classroom. I remember one study where they're helping the other person with their presentation. So I think it was a nice way to look at what body cams show of children in contrast to adults, but also about how they're spending their time.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And it's really like it is all very uplifting as well. And I think in addition to all of like the wonderful advice that this book has for adults, it's like a very loving tribute to toddlers, I think, who are often given short shrift or sort of treated as though they are like people in training, like proto people. But in so many ways, I think they're a lot more human than adults let themselves be. So thank you for sharing this research with the world and with our listeners and readers. I'm so excited to share this book with them.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll just say one more thing for your American readers. We do currently have a Goodreads giveaway that my publisher is putting on, and that's until March 15th.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to drop the link for that giveaway in our show notes and on social media. So, listeners, please just click right on the link and make sure that you put yourself in that giveaway because this is a really, really delightful, uplifting, and very informative book. So, yes, thank you again for joining us. This has been really, really lovely.
Thank you so much. This was great.
All right, listeners, it's your turn now. Please check out Sleep Well, Take Risks, Squish the Peas, Secrets from the Science of Toddlers for a Happier, More Successful Way of Life. Thank you so much for joining us. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.